Here in the Midwest, we're all familiar with the costs of rust and corrosion. Just look at your car, for example. If you live in the South, you might be able to keep the family car looking nice maybe for decades. But here, the road salt and the elements take their toll, eating away at the paint and the body of our cars. And that's just a little piece of the puzzle when it comes to the price of rust. Looked at broadly, rust costs the United States nearly $500 billion every year, more than all natural disasters combined. Rust is said to pose the number one threat to the U.S. Navy, and the Department of Defense even has an Office of Corrosion Policy and Oversight. Corrosion is also part of the reason the American Society of Civil Engineers gave the U.S. a D+ in their most recent report card on American infrastructure. So as winter goes away, we all get to take a firsthand look at the damage the elements can do. Writer Jonathan Waldman joins us to talk about the challenges we face when we're dealing with rust. His new book is called Rust, The Longest War. Jonathan, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So how does rust cost the U.S. that much money? $500 billion a year. How does it all add up to that?
That's a great, how does it add up? It couldn't possibly be that much, right? I mean, it's cars, it's planes, it's ships, it's guardrails on the sides of roads, it's rebar that rusts, it's bridges that fall down, it's concrete that ends up splitting apart because rebar is rusting away inside the concrete. It's kind of everywhere. I mean, we use more metal per capita than we've ever used before in history. So it's kind of no surprise that the cost is so high. And you know, that's kind of another way of looking at it.
Well, one thing that amazed me in your book is we've known about rust for a long time. You quote, I think, a Roman general talking about how their catapults were more of a danger to their own troops because of rust. We've only really started to understand why it happens and what it is in the last 100 years.
Yeah, it's really neat. It's, electrochemistry is not that old a field. I like what Robert Boyle described, I think, around the year 1600. He thought that rust was due to little holes in metal, and he thought that certain liquids could get in there and sort of interfere with the metal, but that's not what it is. It has to do with all but four metals in the universe give up their electrons pretty readily to oxygen or chlorine or... I guess those are the big two, and, you know, it's called oxidation. Oxygen just happens to be the most abundant element on Earth. Chlorine happens to be in all of our oceans, so it's almost like cosmically we were not really meant to sail metal ships across the oceans.
So what are some of the structures that are most affected by rust that add up to that $500 billion price tag?
Well, if you look at the Department of Defense, they have a pretty good breakdown. And the DOD is sort of a subset or a microcosm of what the country as a whole sort of has. So about a quarter of their costs are facilities and infrastructure. You know, they've got bases, they've got wharves, they've got marinas, they've got, hangars where they keep planes and helicopters. Then they've also got a few hundred odd ships, and they've got tens of thousands of vehicles, and those are all rusting away. And then they've got weapons, and you and I don't have weapons, but we have metal things. You know, we have bikes, and we have barbecue grills, and we have tools that are rusting away, probably in the garage. You there?
Oh, yeah, I think we're losing you a little, Jonathan. So you were talking about the various things that rust affects in our lives.
Yeah, so I don't know. My phone made a weird noise. I don't know what the last thing you heard was.
Well, let's dig deeper into the military side of this. We mentioned the Pentagon's Corrosion Policy and Oversight Office. Now, one practical application for people is this costs a lot of money, rust and corrosion. The idea here, I guess, is if the Pentagon can save money on all those marinas and ships and other facilities and weapons you're talking about, we're saving a lot of taxpayer money. So how much progress are they making there?
Oh, they're making a ton of progress. They've only been doing this for about a dozen years. And at first, there was a lot of resistance. A lot of guys working on $100 million weapon systems, they were like, rust, that's not an interesting problem. You know, I'm building weapons that are going to blow up and kill the enemy. You're talking to me about rust? I don't even want to hear it. But there's a very determined and quirky and personable guy who is not an engineer, who sees rust as a cultural problem, who said, look, we're going to have to spend millions, but we're going to save billions. And if we keep doing things the way we are, we can't afford to, you know, defend our country the way we want if we let rust interfere the way it is. So he's this guy, I don't want to say single-handedly, but with the help of a very small office and some bright people, he's his little office has saved billions of dollars for the U.S. Department of Defense.
Now, we also mentioned infrastructure in the country. We hear annual reports talking about the woeful state of things like bridges in the United States, roadways, things like that. How big a part of our problem with our infrastructure is rust and corrosion?
Probably the big problem. I mean, you notice, after, a lot of people have told me after they read the book, they look around and they see the world differently. And all of a sudden, you're driving down the road and you realize how much stuff is made of metal. It's tempting to think, well, it's all asphalt, but it's not all asphalt. You can't just build a bridge out of asphalt, and you can't the Romans built stuff just out of rock, so they didn't have the rust problems we have. Bridges, tunnels, everything you see in the modern world has metal underlying it or holding it up or there somehow. So I don't know. That doesn't sound too detailed, but that's how it is.
We're talking about the impact of rust and corrosion with Jonathan Waldman. His new book is called Rust, The Longest War. We'll talk about looking at the world in a different way, Jonathan. You delved deeply into the making of cans, like as in a can of soda or a can of green beans. We think of this as a simple. This is one of the basics in our lives that are all over the place. Yet, when we think about it, look closely, this is one of the most amazing feats of engineering we're going to encounter.
It's true. I discovered when looking at cans something I found also when looking at rust in general, which is familiarity. It creates a sort of complacency. We see rust so much, we think we get it, but it turns out we don't get it at all, and most of us are very unfamiliar with the relatively few corrosion engineers out there protecting metal objects from sort of a natural death. And with cans, we buy six packs and drink beer and soda all the time, but we never stop and think, oh my God, putting corrosive stuff in a can is somehow marvelous, and our grandparents or great-grandparents kind of would have been amazed that this is even possible. It turns out Mountain Dew is about as corrosive as battery acid, yet we insist on calling it an aluminum can. Really, it's a plastic can, and I say that because in the manufacturing process, they squirt an epoxy into every aluminum can, and that epoxy is tailored to every individual food and beverage, and it has to do, the amount that they use has to do with how corrosive the foods and beverages are that need to be guarded against with the can.
And you actually went to something called Can School to learn how this is done. What happens at Can School?
Can School is an industry-only event. I happen to live just up the road from the world's largest can maker. And when I heard about Can School, I couldn't resist. No journalist had been before, and when they realized I was there and asking some sensitive questions, I nearly got kicked out. And actually, this was years ago, and actually only last week did I get my Can School diploma. But I was there, it was there at Can School where I heard can-making people talk about cans as time bombs. And they call them time bombs because you're putting this extra corrosive stuff inside a sliver of aluminum about as thick as a piece of paper. And that plastic that we use to protect the aluminum, it's the controversial stuff that we got rid of in baby bottles. It's bisphenol A, better known as BPA. And I found out that, well, the whole industry doesn't really want to talk about it. Most people think we solved the problem because, you know, we got rid of it in baby bottles and sippy cups. But it's in all of our foods and beverages that are stored in cans. And I talked to a guy who has some patents on some of these coatings, and he said, I know what goes into them. I know how they can go wrong, and I won't drink from a can. And this wasn't at Can School per se, but this was sparked by Can School. And he told me that he thinks the Surgeon General should change the warning on cans. So instead of saying that women who are pregnant shouldn't drink alcoholic beverages, he thinks it should say women shouldn't drink canned beverages.
Is there, maybe you encountered this at Can School, are there efforts to change the coatings that keep these cans from rusting to use different materials?
Yeah,
or is this a bigger challenge than that?
Oh, it's a huge challenge, and it gets to the nature of engineering, which is always a compromise. And so BPA was phased out in a lot of plastics. Unfortunately, the alternative, which is usually BPS, which is sort of an analog to BPA, it has the same estrogenic effects. It causes cancer in mice, and it turns out the threshold that it might not be so good for us is much lower than the FDA allows, you know, like 1,000 to 1,000,000 to maybe even 10 million times lower. And there's 400 other plastics that all produce some sort of estrogenic activity. But in a way, this shouldn't be a great surprise. The perfect materials were discovered long ago. They're rock. They're iron, and iron has a life expectancy. So when you try to synthesize some modern chemical that can do way more than is perhaps naturally allowable, it's not surprising that there's some other consequence that we're just discovering.
We're talking to Jonathan Waldman about his new book, Rust, The Longest War, and we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Rust costs the U.S. nearly $500 billion a year, said to be the number one threat to the U.S. Navy. I want to know, are you in the middle of this war with rust, maybe at your workplace, at home, on your car? Do you have questions about corrosion, how it works, what it is, what it does? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We continue our conversation now about the cost of rust and corrosion with Jonathan Waldman. His new book is called Rust, The Longest War, and you can join in at 800-642-1234 if you have questions about the engineering problem that is rust, and if you are fighting a war with rust, maybe where you work, maybe at home. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to a caller. We've got Daryl on the line in Beaver Dam. Daryl, hi.
Hi, how are you doing there? Thanks for having me. I wanted to ask if your man there was aware of the beams, the cast iron beams, and some of the old Roman buildings, the antique buildings, and how they protected them from corrosion by coating them with lead.
I was just going to say, I hope you're about to talk to me about white lead. I am familiar with that stuff.
So what's the deal with lead-covered iron beams among the Romans, Jonathan?
So I suspect, I'm not sure of this, but my suspicion is it's kind of an early version of galvanizing. And galvanizing works because you're sort of giving, I hate to say it like this, but you're sort of giving nature something to chew on. Zinc is very willing to corrode, and so when you coat something in zinc, the zinc sort of corrodes instead of the thing you're trying to protect. And my suspicion is that when you coat iron and lead, the lead is the thing that goes instead of the iron. But it also could just make a pretty darn good paint, and the Romans didn't exactly have modern paints that we have today.
Daryl, thanks a lot for that call. And that's a key often in efforts to prevent rust, some kind of alloy, mixing metals, protecting one metal with another. Is that right?
Yeah, so electroplating is kind of the fancy version of galvanizing. There's a number of corrosion-resistant metals you can cover other metals with, but it doesn't necessarily work in every application. It's a real expensive way to go. Galvanizing is what we do on bridges, say in Ohio, or even Florida. There actually aren't that many ways to. There's only a handful of ways to fight rust, so it's kind of a. It's a funny story, what I wrote. It's kind of, well, do we have it in us to handle maintenance? Because there is no magical technical solution that will sort of wipe it all out forever. It's a matter of attending to stuff and looking at it and being sure it's in good shape.
We'll go back to our calls now. Richard is with us in La Crosse. Richard, hi. Richard, are you there?
Yes.
What did you want to bring up, Richard?
My question is, do you know anything about the new stuff they're putting on the highways this day and age? It's a liquid that they pre-treat the roads before, like a snowstorm in the northern snow belt. And I've talked to body men, and they said this stuff is like 10 times more corrosive than road salt. And from personal experience, I have a pretty new truck pickup, and in like 2 years, my truck was like covered with rust underneath. I'm like, and I keep it clean, you know? Like, yeah. I took it to the dealer.
Yeah, so thanks,
Richard. Jonathan, go ahead.
Yeah, so the National Association of Corrosion Engineers, I think, wrote a story. I'm going to forget where it was, but their annual convention was a couple of weeks ago, and there was a story about this type of salt. And I'm going to get it wrong because I've had a lot of chemical names in my head lately, but it's either magnesium chloride or or some other kind of chloride. And they said, oh, driving behind the trucks that apply that stuff to the road is like absolutely the worst thing you can do. Like, don't drive behind those trucks and try not to be on the road that day.
Wow.
But that's, again, that's the trade-off, right? Is if you want to drive in the winter and you want to live in Wisconsin, that's what it might take. Otherwise, you're going to have to drive a lot slower or get studded snow tires or just not leave your house.
All right, Richard, thanks for the call. Talking to Jonathan Waldman, his new book is about rust and the huge expense it causes us here in the United States every year. Corey is with us next in Green Bay. Corey, hi.
Hello.
What do you want to bring up, Corey?
I'm a mechanic here in Green Bay, and rust is just a constant issue that is falling off cars. Cars are actually in disrepair because the rust eats suspension so badly and the body. It's a never-ending battle.
Yeah,
you could wash your car every day, and it wouldn't make a difference.
Well, I do mine something like twice a year, so I'm probably in trouble. So, yeah, it's not just cosmetic, Jonathan. This is doing serious damage to the important bits of the car that make the car go.
Oh, yeah, one of my favorite anecdotes. I do this when I do book talks at bookstores. I ask people to raise their hands about car damage because the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration has recalled cars on account of corrosion, because corrosion has caused everything from wiper failure to airbag failure to steering failure to axle failure and engine failure. But the grand prize, in my estimation, goes to Ford, because corrosion could cause parked vehicles to catch fire. And I used to ask people, I'd say, well, raise your hand if rust ever made your car go boom. And I have heard from two people who had that happen to them.
No kidding. Thanks a lot for the call, Corey. I wanted to bring up another stop that your research took you to, about 20 minutes drive from where I'm sitting right now. You checked out the Rust Store based in Middleton, Wisconsin.
That's right. I was sort of hoping that John Carmona, the owner of the Rust Store, would call up, but he's probably busy solving rust problems over there. And actually, I'm sad to admit, I never made it to the store, but we talked on the phone a number of times and exchanged a lot of emails. And believe it or not, in a country of 300 million people, there's only one, you know, if you don't count Home Depot, which only has a few dozen rust products, the Rust Store is the only store dedicated to selling products to combat rust in kind of a non-commercial application, although they do also sell things to pretty big companies in faraway places.
But this is for people who want to keep, say, their car or other metal things in good repair. And it's kind of a bold stance in a disposable throwaway culture. This is an effort to keep using the same stuff instead of replacing it.
Yeah, and John Carmona fields a lot of interesting calls. He gets a surprise every day. Sometimes people want to know how to keep their weapons or their guns from rusting. Some guys want to know how to keep the power tools they have, their woodworking tools, around. Some guys want to work on their boats. Some people want to remove rust stains from their driveways or from their golf clubs. I mean, you name it, he's dealt with it before.
All right, we'll take one more caller. I think we've got Dan on the line in Marathon. Dan, hi.
Hi. Yeah, going back to your comment or your guest comment about magnesium chloride, the bulk of the counties in the state of Wisconsin are using a salt brine solution. They're spraying bridges and roads for what's called anti-icing. It's a 23% solution of salt dissolved in water. Very few are using magnesium chloride. So realistically, what gets sprayed on the roads during the winter for frost and that is minor compared to the amount of salt that's used for de-icing, which is actually when it's actually snowing out.
Dan, thanks a lot for the call and clarifying that. But however we put the salt on the road, we put a lot of it on the road, and it affects the cars and the bridges, right, Jonathan?
Yeah, and I'm sad to admit I'm not familiar with the county by county salt procedures up in Wisconsin, but I guess the bigger point is that we always talk about the Rust Belt, but some of the corrosion consultants I talked to, they said forget the Rust Belt, it's all about the Salt Belt states, and the Salt Belt is everywhere north and east of Kansas City, Missouri, and it's there that salt is applied to the roads either before it snows or while it's snowing. And that's what ends up eating away at a lot of our infrastructure.
Jonathan, thanks a lot for taking the time and giving us new insight into the world of rust.
Yeah, I hope I didn't make it too boring. You know, the book's a lot funner than just, you know, it gets this and it gets that.
That's Jonathan Waldman. He's a journalist and author. We've been talking about his new book. It's called Rust, The Longest War. You can continue the conversation on the Central Time Facebook page, and maybe if you have a good Rust picture, that's one thing we didn't get into, the aesthetics of Rust, you can share that as well on the Central Time Facebook page.